Hard to believe we're back in the saddle. Well, use my glasses here for a little bit and some things that were jotted down, but I have had some time to reflect back on not only this team and its accomplishments, but the whole Final Four and the situation and the last couple of weeks, you know, from the Big Ten tournament on, it seems like it was a blur. But I guess now I can give credit where credit is due. And honestly, I feel this team gave me every single drop that they had. I've had some teams that have given me a lot. But this team, I want to say maxed out, but it came as close to maxing out as any team I've had. You know, Mex always gives me a ton of stats and the accomplishments, and but we all know those. You know, the regional was a big win to get to a Final Four, the Big Ten tournament and the Big Ten conference tournament were both important to me. And you know, this team has done something where we've this group of guys has done something where we've won some of those Thanksgiving Day tournaments too, which we hadn't done in a while, you know. And all of a sudden now I think we've won three in a row. The 32 wins, second most in school history, was big. I think anytime you get up there with setting history, it's important. What I loved is the Big Ten sends out some stats each week, and they send out stats of who's leading, you know, in points as a team. A lot of team stats, a lot of individual stats, and I think we led in 10 categories, and we're top 10 in the nation in 9 categories, including leading the country in assists. Our rebounding's been up there, but what's been different about this team, we had some offensive and defensive efficiencies that were great, and it's always good when you're good on both sides of the ball. Obviously, Cassius had one of the great seasons in MSU history, being a first-team All-American, being Big Ten Player of the Year, Big Ten Tournament Outstanding Player, the East Regional Outstanding Player, and has set Big Ten single season assist record. He's accomplished some things that not many guys have accomplished. But we were successful because of a lot of other guys that did some things too. And, you know, McQuaid in the Big Ten tournament final versus Michigan had a incredible games. Goins, of course, big shot against Duke. Aaron Henry and Gabe, you know, I thought Aaron played really well throughout the NCAA tournament. Gabe had the big game against LSU when we were in trouble. Tillman stepping up on both ends when Nick went down. And even Foster Lawyer, you know, having that big game against Ohio State in the Big Ten tournament. It seemed like everybody added something, which is great when you can do that with a team. Being at the Final Four for me this year was one of the great, great, great things, because it was fun to walk around town. You know, I went for my morning and evening jaunts, and to see so many Michigan State people proud to be Spartans. We've made no secrets about it. It's been a difficult year and a half around here, and a lot of people were hurting over the last few years, but not that a Final Four brings anything that saves anybody, but it did bring us closer together. I thought it brought our whole team, community, state closer together, and for that I was grateful to our players. I hope people realize that, you know, even across our whole campus, there's a lot of great things that our people are doing here to try to make sure that we become the greatest, safest university in the country, and maybe it was climactic to see it all come together for a Final Four. You know, that's where you get to see everybody doing their job, from our ticket people to our administrators to everybody. And it went so smooth this year. And I don't know if it's the experience that we've had of being there many a times, or that everybody just kind of rallied around. It I looked at the Final Four this year, and I looked at the hotels and what they've done for the parents and what they've done for the players, it made me proud that I think Michigan State's been on the forefront. Not only that, because we've been to eight of them in the last 20 or 21 years, but when you look at some of the things that happen, you get in that arena and there's 73,000 people watching. And I mean, some of that was, you know, Mark Hollis and what he did for our basketball in 2003 and how that started the ball rolling of being in these big arenas, which some people will argue is not the greatest. Some people would rather you be in a smaller arena. But I mean, for the fall to roll, we stayed at a hotel. That hotel was a big host for the Super Bowl a year before, and just listening to them talk, I don't think there's any question that the Final Four is maybe the greatest sports spectacle in the nation. You know, of all sports, of anything, as far as they were talking about the pep rallies, they were talking about the number of people at a games, the downtown hotels. What they did for us, the seating, you know, was another. Mark did a lot for the NCAA when he was chairperson, but getting our students in those end zone seats. All of those things had a little bit of Michigan State to it because of some of the people. The extra touches around the hotel, you know, having a room for the players, having a room for the parents. That was all Mark Hollis pushed and when he was on the committee. And I think the total experience from even 15 to now was incredibly upgraded. And so I give the NCAA and I give, you know, some of it to our institution. I also want to look ahead till next year. I saw where people have us picked, you know, pretty high in the not so early, whatever it's called. I would just say ridiculous thoughts when nobody knows around the country who's even recruiting who and who's got who. But I guess if you have to be in, you know, somewhere in the top 5 or 10, that's a good thing. We will certainly embrace that. But we got to make sure we learn our lessons on, you know, what made us great this year and what were some pitfalls when we struggled a little bit. And hopefully we can talk to our players and staying focused on the task at hand is still the number one issue this day and age in the Twitter world. Right now, the task for every player, I think we learned one lesson that a lot of you might frown upon, but probably the two toughest teams played for a national championship. Hey. I'm telling you, man, your wife is on you. She just got to put one of those find Earl things, you know, we can find you anywhere you go. But getting back to business here, the weight room is going to be very important to us. Getting stronger is going to be very important. And getting better at some things, maybe ball handling a little better for some guys, post moves a little better from some guys, three-point shooting a little better from some guys, and realizing that defense still wins championships, rebounding is still important. Don't forget what made us, and don't forget what makes the great teams that play at the end. Learn from some teams we beat. Learn from some teams that beat us, and take about 2 weeks off here, and then get back to work. So that's a long summation of the season. So I'll open it up to your questions now. You know, there was one other thing that I didn't want to hit on that was told to me during the tournament that I still think is what I must be proudest of, should be proudest of, and that's that 23 of our 24 recruiting classes have played in a Final Four. And when you can do something like that, that's consistency at the utmost level. And I couldn't even believe that when I read it. And yet, as I thought about it, when my first press conference, and especially the first one after we went to an NCAA tournament, it talked about consistency. And if we're good enough 5 years from now, that'll be worth something. 10 years from now, and now it's been 20-some years, and we've still been pretty consistent in that area. So that may be what I'm most proud of all the accomplishments we had this year, because that speaks for all the teams that have been here throughout, you know, throughout my tenure as a coach. Questions?
Tom, you seem to insist that everybody says, are you one of the elite programs? You insist you haven't arrived yet. There's been a lot of talk about needing a second national championship to be, quote, validated as a coach. Do you feel that you need that third national championship to be validated as a program to get you to accept being an elite program?
Well, I don't think I need it. I think we need it, you know. And then when we get there, I think we're going to need a fourth one. And I got a lot of calls from our press conference here before I left when it was asked of me, and the way it was asked was, people say you will not be validated till you win another one. Do you agree with that? Well, and I said to myself, if I disagreed with that, that would be like I've already accomplished everything. So I did agree with the person who asked me it. I agreed with the people that every year I seriously go into the year wanting to win a national championship. I can say in the last 10 years, a lot of that time, more than half of it, I felt we were good enough to have a chance to win a national championship. I've already stated that in 14, I thought we had a real good chance. In 16, I thought we had a real good chance. In 18, I thought we had a real good chance. And, you know, and then when it was an Elite Eight, when it was the first game, when it was the first weekend. And as we learned through everybody this year, that's the way that tournament works. But validating our program is done by 23 out of 24 classes. Validating our program is done by 22 straight NCAA tournaments. That validates your program as a very solid, consistent program. Championships, you know, puts you in the blue blood stuff more. Now, I say that, and 8 Final Fours in 21 years is as good or better than anybody, too. So that's got to be something. But we are measured on championships. That's just the way it is. I measure ourselves on championships, so I don't blame anybody else. I think that's a good thing, and I'm validating is probably the wrong word because, you know, I talked to Tony Bennett last night, and I don't think he feels any different in some ways. I don't know if that's what validation is, but I think you should never be validated on one game or one season. I think to validate a program, and that's what I'm trying to develop as a program. You know, 20 years is good enough to say, you know what, we've been consistent, we've been good, we've been great even. But I guess I'm looking for that elite, and the elite would be, let's let Michigan State win 3 national championships. Let's let my era win 2, you know, and keep building on that. So I don't know if I answered that very good, but it did get confusing because everybody thought I said, I'm not worth anything unless I win another national championship. Now, I got a lot of alums that probably feel that way, but I don't feel that way. And it was just the way the question was asked, how I answered it. And I got a lot of guys saying, wow, you think you have to do that? That's not right. And so I tried to answer it best I could.
Tom, off the court, can you please talk about what these kids individually meant to you? It seemed to be one of the most enjoyable seasons you've ever had off the court.
Very true. Not always. If we lose, sometimes we came back right away. This time I said, you know what, we're going to stay. Now I did it for a couple of reasons. Number one, financially, both the parents and ourselves, you know, it's a 4-day minimum, so it wasn't going to cost any more financially. Two, I felt like players deserved the right or the chance to enjoy a Final Four. When you're in the film room, you know, I never saw anybody except those that were out early in the morning or late at night when I went out walking. But I thought I gave those kids a chance. And then when you do that, you say, yeah, but if something happens, you're going to be responsible. Something goes wrong. It didn't even cross my mind with this team. And that's probably the best compliment I can give them over how they played or what they did. And to see those guys with their families, or maybe as important in this particular time at Michigan State, to see them interacting with our alums all over the city as I walked around with my boy Mariucci and everything, it was, and to have people come up to me and say, yeah, so-and-so just took a picture with my kids, and hey, thank you, they just signed the hat for my son, or they did this for my daughter. I think we needed to bring our university together, and I think those kids did more than just win basketball games. And for that, I will be eternally grateful, because I do think I have a meeting today with my team, and I do think the first thing I'm going to say is, you've set some standards on the court, but you've set some standards off the court that we have to live by and try to meet now to try to improve this place and make it the safest, greatest institution in the country. And that's one of my new missions. So, yes.
I wondered if you had a chance to reflect maybe on the past 2.5-3 months where you've extended guys' minutes. You had a bunch of guys playing 30 minutes. I wonder what the cost benefits you found there, because usually you like guys in that 20 to 25 minute range.
Yeah.
Obviously, this was a little different.
Yeah, you know, I went back and I, as I told you, I had Mech bring over our 8 Final Fours, and I looked at, you know, our overall stats, our conference stats, our tournament stats, the teams we played in the tournament and how we played. And I had some people say to me, well, you're not scoring as many points in the tournament. That happened 2 or 3 of the 8. But the biggest thing that happened is 90% of these runs, we were playing guys in the low 30s or high 20s, as you say. And I do think it took a toll. I think it took a toll on Matt McQuaid. You know, at the end of that game when he cramped up shooting that first 3, and then he just couldn't guard the same, and then he was out of the game for 2 minutes, and he missed the big 3. I think Cassius definitely took a toll on him. I think Xavier took a toll on him. I think Kenny took a toll on him. You know, it's a good excuse, and again, you can't put apples to apples. You can't say, well, you know, this team played their guys this. It just depends how you play and what you're used to. And I actually thought both Virginia and Texas Tech played 8 or 9 guys, but 8 guys, I mean, Texas Tech stayed in that game both against us and them because their 3 subs played better than some of their starters. And so, you know, we knew that could rear its ugly head, and it did through foul trouble, and what happened there that I didn't realize till later, and I might have said it in a press conference, but, you know, Gabe had to play 14 straight minutes. He's never done that. But then it was McQuaid that never got even a little bit of a rest, and he had to guard the best guy, and then when we got somebody else in there, we moved him to the other best guy, and we were just kind of, you know, worked him to death. And at the end, you know, they scored a few baskets. I don't think they would. But our defense was good enough. They scored 61 points. Our offense wasn't good enough. They did a good job. We did a poor job. And I still think, as I look back on that game, those damn free throws that first half, to miss 3 front ends of a 1-on-1, when you say big deal, well, 6 points in that game is an eighth of the points, you know, and that was a big deal, you know, but they made some plays at the end. We didn't make some plays at the end. I definitely think it didn't help us. You know, we thought if we had Kyle Arnes even, you know, just healthy enough to give us some minutes and then use Gabe 2-3 minutes here, 2-3 minutes there, he still might have played 12-14 minutes, but in a different way, really hurt us defensively. And And the same with Nick, you know, when he got in foul trouble, he's the only guy that was scoring inside. And he just, you know, I think he asked the question at the press conference, would I have done it different as far as played guys with two fouls? Or somebody asked me that. Not when we were 2-3 points. If we could gone in at halftime 2-3 points down or up, I thought that, and save our guys from another foul, I thought that was the best thing to do. If we would have got down more, I would have probably played both of them.
Tom, I was wondering if there's been any update on Josh's condition ever since an original timetable has been given. And also, I know he was right on the cusp of not being able to get a red shirt, but is that something that he might be able to do?
Mm-hmm. Good question. You know, I think the timetable now is he gets some more x-rays and all that stuff in about 2 weeks. If there is a timetable after that, 3 to 4 weeks, if everything's right, I think he'll be able to start full go by June, from what I've been told. So what's that, a month and a half from now? Almost two. And that's on a very precautionary, which we'll do. He'll be able to do some things. But to get back on a court playing, I'd say June 1 is a honest and realistic date. The red shirt thing, we'll probably put that in. I would doubt if he'll use it. The hope is that he'll have a good year and be on his way, but I would think that he'd have a chance. I mean, with all the waivers that are going on, I think he missed it by one game. So that gets put in at the end of the year, and we wouldn't know that till later on.
Tom, I feel like at the end of the season we get asked a lot, how do you look at this season? Was it a success or whatever? And I know you say you measure on championships, but when you get past it a few days and you look at everything that was accomplished versus being in a Final Four that seemed, not that you're going to win, but a very winnable Final Four, something that was there for the taking. How do you, I guess, balance those two things, the frustration of that, but knowing what
that is hard. I think there's been two in my mind that were, you know, at least we were even with, or, you know, the 1-0-10 with, you know, we had all the injuries. Remember, Kalen was out and Raymar was injured and Delvon was injured and somebody else missed. But, you know, I said, geez, that was we lose by one to Butler. They lose by one to Duke. You know, you had a realistic chance there. This one, I thought we had a realistic chance, but I'll be honest with you, I didn't know as much about those teams. You know, Texas Tech, you didn't know as much. You talk to Gonzaga, you talk to some people out west. It's hard to practice against a team like that. But how I look at it at the end, it was an incredible year. These guys did more for me, I think more for this city, more for this university, than maybe even winning it. Just because of the way they handled themselves, the way they interacted with people, the get up one more time, then you're knocked down, the real life experiences for not only them, but I got so many letters up there from people that used our team in some of their own problems that they've had or that they've had in their family. And it was just one of those teams where, you know, hell, when your star player could be the neighbor next door, it makes for a good year. And never satisfied. I told them that. I told them I never will be. I told them if we win another one, I still won't be. So, you know, just accept that. But I should accept, too, that I had a special group that gave me every single bit they could give me and did it for the betterment of the team, the program, and the university. And this day and age of the Twitter and the all about me, they demonstrated zero of that. And I if I'm ever again fortunate enough to have that happen, I'd be a blessed guy. You know, could it happen next year with a lot of the guys back? maybe. But they did something that I thought was incredibly special. And at a time when we all needed to have somebody help us to feel good about being a Spartan and what we can accomplish and what we're doing. They were great ambassadors.
Tom, do you expect Winston and or Ward to enter their name in the draft? And what would you tell them are the pros and cons, even if they did want to come back, just to go through the process?
You know, I'm not big on just going through the process to go through the process. I think sometimes we have to look at, we have to understand that college, we think, is a big business because of the amount of money that there's in college sports. But pro is a business. In the business, there are no emotions in a business decision. There are a lot of emotions in a collegiate decision, if you ask me. And where I think everybody thinks it's good to get information, it is good to get information, but you still have trouble. What is that information? You know, last year when the G League started, I started realizing that, you know, there's other motives for getting guys to come out early. It's not just for the NBA. It's to fulfill a lot of other things. I would recommend, and I am recommending, that both of them take a look. What does that mean? The NBA has done a, or the NCAA, or the combination, I think it's the NBA, where now you can put your name in. The taking an agent thing, I don't really understand why, but you can take an agent. That does not mean you're coming out. You can get an evaluation from the underclassmen group. The evaluation is, are you a lottery pick? Are you 15 to 30? Are you 30 to 45? And are you 45 to 60? Now, the problem is there's people out there that if you're 30 to 45, that'll say, well, we can help you get to be 20. And yet you could also be 60. And so I think it's very difficult for players to try to figure out. And then you'll get other people that tell you there's only one team needed for you to get, you know, to be, you only need one team to like you. But, you know, that's like Russian roulette, you know. I think, in all honesty, that a coach has to try to help his players understand the process. And when Nick went through it last year, not quite like it is now, but he came back and was double all in. In fact, there was an advantage, I thought, to him going and listening to some people tell him what to do. Now that league's changing too with the G League and everything. And so I don't know totally what to expect, but I do know that you can put your name in. You can get a much better evaluation than NBA.com or soandso.com or fredhuman.com or, you know, earlswife.com. You know, they all got them out there and they all got all these different things that, that become gospel because they're in print on the internet. At least this will be the teams, and they will, I think, get a group of people to give you the most honest opinion. The problem I see with it, it's still a very broad opinion, you know. And but checking that out and making a decision on based on that, I think, is an intelligent move for me as a coach, for them as a player.
Something?
Yeah, from a thing, I think you put your name in by the 11th, which is tomorrow, and you have till the 21st, and then you'll get some input back from them in that period of time. And the 21st of April, if you put your name in then, that you're really putting your name in, you have until March or May 29th to remove your name again. And you can still go back to college, and you can have an agent. Now, the agent can't pay for things. The agent more can set up your visits, which we do anyway. you know, I'm not sure on all of it. Some of this came from the NBA. Some of it came from the Condoleezza Rice stuff, I guess, and all the reforms. It's getting a little confusing to me, which means it's going to be very confusing to the kids. But you saw, I think, three kids from Michigan came out, and everybody's calling me, well, they're gone. And I said, what do you mean they're gone? Well, they got agents. You know, you can't have an agent now during this period of time. And there's rules on what they can and can't do. They have to be certified by the NCAA, which 90% of them are. But that doesn't mean they're totally gone either. So where I see it as a problem for the colleges is, so roster management, what do you do? You know, if you really thought a kid was on the brink of going or not going, and how many put their name in because of their egos, because of their family, because of their friends, how many really would want to go? There's so many things to juggle that more or less, I think you're going to see hundreds of kids put their names in. I don't know that, but I think so, because you get an evaluation, and so I think it's going to be, if it's good for the kids, it's good, but I think it's going to be difficult to try to figure out and, you know, who you're recruiting. And now there's a lot of kids that haven't signed yet, and what will happen there. It's an interesting dilemma, and I'm just going to stick to what I've stuck to the last couple of years. I'm not going to worry about it. I think I have a good feeling. Nick tried it last year. Wasn't like there was all negative. There was a lot of positive things that he got from that. There were a lot of positive comments he got from that. He chose to come back. Cassius is, you know, one thing about Cassius, he's got some unfinished business too. I mean, he's got a chance to set some records that have never been approached by anybody in college. So those will be part of his decisions, where he thinks he's at. But I'm pretty comfortable that he'll make the decision. It won't be a bad decision. But I would encourage Cassius to take a look and at least figure out where they have him, which doesn't mean that's where he would get drafted either. Because when they have that many hundreds of kids or 100 kids and there's only 30 spots or 60 spots, they're going to have more. Some teams are going to have more than one kid in the same spots, you know, so I think it's difficult for the players, you know, and it's difficult for the coaches. And what it's become is a nice thing for the NBA. They can evaluate people and see and make some decisions. So I didn't answer that very good, but it's a confusing. I took the whole day yesterday and got educated on it, both from the NBA, from our own compliance people, from the NCAA. I still don't know what the hell I'm talking about. How's that?
One of the adages in college basketball is that you have to come back different, even if you got a lot of guys back, right? The idea that if you come back exactly the same and do the same year, it's very hard to do. And I'm wondering, for a guy like Cassius, who just grinded out a year and the amazing year that he had, to have Joshua back next to him, something a little different, a classmate that he came in with, how helpful that is to going through a similar grind again next year, perhaps?
You know, I just talked to Josh and Arnie, and we, like I said, we have a team meeting today, but I talked to Josh after. I told him to write down things that he saw from the player side of it, and since he was semi an assistant coach from the coaching side of it, and I told Arnie today I want him to do the same thing, because I think those two guys, they've gotten real close together, because whenever you're injured, you rehab together, you know, and stuff, and he was telling me about some book Josh was reading and that it really helped him during the tournament because he was struggling with not playing. You know, Josh was struggling, but he knew he hadn't been playing since January, you know, and Arnie was a little different. And so they've become very close, and I think that's going to be very important to say, What did we do? What didn't we do? Why did some guys play better at the end? Why did other guys not play as well at the end? You know, were they worn down? Were they not doing the same things? You know what they were doing, how much time they were coming in shooting. You know, I mean, free throw shooting was a strength of ours all year long. You know, we had two of our key guys miss some free throws in that last game. If you go up four at halftime instead of down two, just by making a couple of free throws, that makes a big difference in that game. So I told those guys that exactly what you said. If we're the same as next year, we won't be good enough because other people are going to get better. And I'm having a meeting today, and then I have an individual meeting, like an exit interview with that the NBA has. Only mine's going to be about what you got to get better at. And, you know, from strength things to shooting things to ball handling things to post moves to just a little bit of everything. So we're going to, you know, I agree with you that our running game, I thought, was one of the best in the country. And Arnie's one of our best runners. And Josh, after struggling his freshman year, like all freshmen do, became one of our best runners. And I think of Cassius averaging, how many assists did he average? Huh? 7.6. And he didn't have Nick in there that every time he threw him the ball, two out of three were going to be assists the last, you know, even 10 games, really, in some way, shape, or form. He didn't have Josh on one wing or Arnie for over half the season, didn't have Arnie on the other. And then when he did have guys on the wings, they were more worn down. So I think if we could get back to playing guys, our running game is going to be as good as anybody's. And Josh and he will have a big part of that. And I think it will help him a lot as he and McQuaid became close. You know, it's, again, quarterback and receiver. And I think Josh will be a lot smarter even because he's figured out guys that didn't have as good of games or did. Why didn't they? Why did they? Josh is taking notes on everything. He's incredible in that area. And Kyle said today, you know, I've been thinking about those things too. And I said, well, just write them down so we have them. So next year, you know, as we're hopefully making a run, you guys can add to it with some of these things.
Just real quickly, so Arns is going to go through this again?
Yeah,
He's still coming back, right?
Hell yeah.
All right. I thought maybe he'd say, I've had enough.
No. He made a trade-off. He's getting married, and so then he'll come back a little different, and then he's going to come back. But Kyle, God, I wish he could have been in the conversation I had Monday morning with his mother. You know, he's been through so much, but you guys asked me. I answered you as honestly as I could. As I look back now, I think Kyle would have come to me Sunday and said, I'm suiting up tomorrow, and if you need me for 5 minutes, I'd play. And I did not think that was even possible. But that kid, we lost a lot when we lost him. We lost a tough, good shooter who was playing 20 minutes a game and could run like a deer. And he'd be back. He'll be back.
Tom, I haven't asked you this in 3 or 4 years, but you used to.
I don't like the, what team do you like?
What team do I like?
Baseball. And it's got to be a baseball question, right?
No.
Oh, go ahead.
No.
But, stumped you there, didn't I?
Yeah. You used to say, I ain't going to be coach when I'm 70. Well, I hate to remind you, you're 6 years away. I know you're not going to make an announcement, but are you starting to see the sunset of your career?
If I did, that sun rose this year. So that part where it's going to set, it's if it was right here, you know, and it was setting, it's back up here. Not just because of the season, but because those players definitely reinvigorated me. Listen, there's so many things that have been difficult the last year and a half, and you can't talk about any of them. But this team, there's times you don't feel good about what you're doing. I think we all go through that. You guys go through that in your profession. you know, you guys got people mad at you for what you write or what you say, or just like I do. And sometimes it gets to you and sometimes it doesn't. But there's no question everybody's been through a lot. But this team made me feel good about what I do and who I am and who I can impact and how I can help. And it makes me feel good that, you know, part of the new mission, as I've said, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart, is to win another championship, okay? But part of it is to learn from whatever mistakes were made and try to grow and be better. And everybody wants to be part of the solution. You know, you tell your players all the time, be part of the solution, not part of the problem. And I think I'm in a position where I can try to help be part of the solution that's even way bigger than basketball. So I don't know how long I'm going to coach. I really don't. I got a son who's going to start college. You know, I still go to PTA meetings where most of you are done with them. I got to go to a high school graduation where most of you aren't going to have to do that later in your life, although it's getting to be, there's getting to be more people like me. But my son keeps me invigorated. He keeps me feeling younger. This team has done that. And last year, you know, all the things everybody went through kind of pushes you the other way. So my players, without knowing it, it's either a good thing or a bad thing, but they're going to have me around for a while.
Tom, kind of speaking to the dynamic of the team and what you learned about it, that aspect and how critical it was to your run this year. Next year you're going to have 10, maybe 11 guys that can, who knows, maybe more, I don't know, but that can give you something that can contribute on the floor. Are you going to do anything differently this summer or take some things you learned this year in terms of the closeness, the chemistry, the connectedness, and be able to figure it out when you have so many more guys to sift through and maybe a little bit more talent, no defense to this year's group?
Yeah, you know, you think that, and yet every year that I think that going in, then there comes an injury, and then there becomes this, and then there becomes that. And, you know, competition is good. You know, it's the one thing that I always agree with John Calipari, you know. Competition and practice. I think of our championship team, and I was going through the list because some of those guys were coming back to Minneapolis, and I said, can you believe we had this guy, this guy, this guy redshirting? We had this guy, this guy, this guy, you know, on the scout team. And, I mean, it was amazing, and it was why we probably won a championship. I mean, I think we see where 5 and 6 guys don't do it very often anymore. You know, Villanova played 9. You know, these two schools played 8 and 9 guys. And as far as the chemistry, that is going to be a little up to me, but a lot up to the leaders. You know, what Cassius, what Josh, what, you know, a guy like Kyle. And, you know, and then how does a guy like Xavier bridge the new young guys and the old guys, you know? Those are always important parts, but hopefully that competition will push us a little bit. And, you know, I think the culture that has been built here, I mean, I remember this. We've had years where we got lucky, you know. Kansas got beat in the second game, and, you know, we didn't have to play Syracuse 1 year early because Vermont beat them. And we played Northern Iowa, who was good, but somebody, you know, they beat Kansas. I mean, we kind of lucked out, or, you know, I think I wouldn't say the year we made the great shot against Maryland, we lucked out because we had led by 16 in that game. But sometimes you luck out on a last second shot. We earned our way to this championship, you know, in every way. We earned our way to the Big Ten championship. We earned our way to the Big Ten tournament championship. I think we earned our way by the players that made this place. The culture we have here is different. It's special. I don't care what anybody says. It is special. And never did that rear its head more than this year. Because, it was those former players that called back and encouraged. And I know we talk about it, and some of you think it's probably just a line of BS. It's not. It's what few get to do anymore. Our culture is that it's pretty unselfish. We had a couple years where it was selfish, and we remedied that. And, you know, I look at these last quite a few years, and this culture has been where it's about your teammate and it's about the other guy, and that's what they sign up for. And if I'm sure we'll get some that are selfish, and if we do, they'll be gone. You know, it was just proven a team was in the national championship game with the highest ranked kid on his team was 125th coming out of high school. It's true that we just played in the Final Four with what I heard. I don't know you two analytical guys or numbers guys would know, but one McDonald's All-American on any of the four teams. He didn't play? Yeah, he didn't play, but I thought was the guard from Virginia, Kyle, I think he was. So, good point, but I think he was. So, you know, it's not just about talent, and it's about guys that have a common goal of what they want to achieve. And usually when they achieve that, everybody reaps some benefits. Now, it's getting harder to sell that. I mean, now we're getting guys that don't even want to go with a group of guys. Now we're getting guys that want to go off on their own so they can be the man. To each his own, you know. The culture here talks about team, talks about togetherness. We walk it, we eat it, we sleep it, and we do it. And it's been done 20 years ago, and those guys were all back. It was done 30 years ago with Steve Smith, and they were back. It was done 40 years ago with Magic and Kelser, and they were back. So this has not been a Tom Izzo thing. This has been, I've been blessed by being at a university where it's been important. It's been important that we had a busload of football, former football guys that were there, and they were taking pictures in the bus and sending them to me. It was incredible. So it's going to be harder. You know, there is some advantage that if you have six players, there's nobody arguing. And then you have one injury, you have one foul problems, and you don't accomplish your goals. This is about accomplishing the goals, and those goals are a bunch of guys stuck together. Good lesson for our university. A bunch of guys stuck together, put their egos aside, put their selfishness aside, and had a common goal on what they wanted to achieve. And what they did in those last 14 games of the year under some crazy circumstances will be as beneficial to me as winning a national championship, because they taught me something, and I appreciate it. Now, today's meeting will be about those things, and I will talk about those things to them. And then right after, it'll be back to dog eat dog, that this is what we got to do to get where we want to get next year. And there's not going to be a lot of margin for error because we didn't quite make it this year. So we're going to learn from what we didn't do. We're going to build on what we did do. And we're going to try to make the team, the program, the university a great place.
Tom, I was wondering, how do you look back on Aaron's first season? And, you know, when you just mentioned those one-on-one meetings, what are some of the specific things you really want him to focus on and sort of grind on this summer to be ready for next year?
You know what? I thought Aaron had about a four-part year. You know, he had the part when he came here, and he was really impressive. And I called Gary and said, man, thanks for pushing us. He's going to be a pretty good player. I didn't think it would be this year, but I said a pretty good player. Then he had a lull where he went through his, you know, part where I just didn't think he worked hard enough, spent as much time as he needed to. Still a great kid, still a good student, still a good player, but something was missing. And then, you know, when Josh went down, If you would have seen him that day, because I had just talked to him 3 days earlier and said, you know, Aaron, you never know if a guy could get hurt, a guy could get in foul trouble. You got to spend a little more time. You got to get in here and watch more film. And, I mean, it happened like I was a prophet. Unfortunately, Josh had to be the one to go through it. But if you would have saw Aaron's face when I said, I already talked to you about this. Now we're in a little bit of crisis management. But to his credit, he worked himself out of crisis management. And he did it by learning how to spend more time and work a little harder. And there was a little bit of roadkill on the way to that, a little bit. But if you look at how that kid played the last 10 games, he made incredible strides, you know, on both ends of the court. But now, so now he's a pretty good defender, you know. Him, Josh, Arnie, those are going to be pretty good perimeter defenders. He became a better offensive player. His shot doesn't look broken. It just needs reps. But reps means you got to spend time. Spending time is something that every freshman, most freshmen, have to learn how to do. And to push freshmen to do that, there's going to be a little roadkill. There's going to be a little change in who I am and what I am. And it goes back to that like it, love it, or live it. And I think Aaron's big thing in the offseason, continue to work on his ball handling, continue to work on his jump shot. Let's get that body in the best shape we can, and let's make running that lane the norm, not the exception. And if he does that, you know, someday I plan on sitting in a room with him and laughing about all the things that went on in March instead of defending all the things that went on. And when that comes to fruition, he's going to be a happy guy, but there'll be nobody happier than me. So,
kind of along those lines with both Aaron and X, they had such strong finishes. And didn't talk to them in the locker room. We asked them, do you think about it, the decision to test the water, I guess. And both of those guys, to their credit, seem like they have a pretty good understanding of it. But how will you approach that in the future if you think 100-some guys now, you know, in the future?
And I say that. I don't know how many will. I think it could be more, personally. Yeah. Let's face it. I got 15 or 16 guys on my team, and every one of them want to be NBA players. And probably 2/3 of them think they're NBA players. And, I mean, it's just the way it is. And that's on my team. And there's 350 of these teams. And in the BCS alone, there's 100 of them. If every team has two guys that do it, that's 200 right there. How do I approach it? I'd be honest with them. Something that most people aren't. I tell them what I think their strengths are. I tell them what I think their negatives are. I tell them what I think they got to get better at. I thought Nick Saban personally did an unbelievable job the other day, if anybody saw his rant. And I thought it was so on. You know, please take one thing from me today, this year, in my entire life. Quit thinking coaches are holding players back or trying to keep players for their team, and start thinking that coaches care enough, probably more than anybody else in their life, maybe than their parents, that we're trying to help them make smart decisions, not crazy decisions. And that's not going to come out until one of you roll up your sleeves and start looking at all the players that come out and how many don't make it or make it for a year or two and then are defunct. And until that happens, but that's not good news. It's more fun to put out there that everybody should be leaving. I mean, if Cassius Winston is good enough to go and a certain pick, and that I feel, and it's not just the pick, do I feel guys are ready to make it at a level that we all joke about? I mean, I just love talking to my NBA buddies. I spent some time with Ryan Saunders, came over to the hotel on Friday night. And and some of our former pros were there, and Jason Richardson was there, a couple guys, and those guys just laugh how kids think it is a rite of passage to go from college to the NBA. And they just laugh about it, you know? And I said to them, well, JR, did you think it that way when you remember his freshman year, he played 15 and a half minutes a game. And start writing about these kids deserve the right to have a process. And why don't, you know, you just said, Fred, I should be dead or I should stay here till I'm dead or whatever you kind of indirectly said I should do. Why do I care if I lose a guy? Why do I care if it I'm living my dream every day. Every day I live my dream. Every single day. Now, there are days that it's a nightmare. There are days it's a nightmare. But it is what I think I was put on the earth to do, help other people live their dreams. And that's what everybody's put on. You guys are put on the earth to try to, through your messages, to try to make people see things better. And at least you come to my press conference and have, it gives you the right to do it. You come to my practices. And yet we have kids asking people that have no clue about the kid, whatever else, and he's going to make the decision of his life. Are we kidding ourselves? You know, please figure out that I would love Cassius Winston to be the top 10 pick in the draft next 2 months from now, and he's gone. I'll be in that green room. I'll be having a hell of a time. I promise each and every one of you, that is the truth. And for the idiots that are out there that are trying to paint us as the people that want to hold on or want to stop our guys from making money or stop them from living their dream to satisfy my program, I'm going to keep my job. Unless I do something wrong, I'm going to keep my job because I won't last long enough that my program is going to go down enough to get fired, in my humble opinion. So if I have John Doe or Jack the Barber or, you know, Pete the Miner from the UP, I'm going to keep my job. I'm going to find a way to win. And if I can help another guy get to do what I do, you can bet your bottom dollar I'm going to do that. And I'm insulted, not by you guys, by what people say out there about us as coaches. It's an insult to me to think that, you know, we have a guy for 3 years and they've trusted us and then we're going to help them make a bad decision so that I have a chance to win two more games next year? What about the guys that are helping to make bad decisions that have no vested interest in the guy? When I make a vested interest in a guy, if, you know, tomorrow, whether he's president or not, I'm going to call Magic and say, what do you think about this guy leaving? I'm going to call Steve Smith. I'm going to call my buddies in the NBA. I'm going to do this and that. I'm going to call the parents. There's so much work that's done behind the scenes that nobody appreciates and nobody understands. That's what my job's going to be the next 2 weeks. And so it is difficult. I know this. I don't know one player I've ever recruited that doesn't think he's going to the NBA. And you know what? I've had a lot of players I recruited that I didn't think were going to the NBA. And shazam, at the end, they got there. That's cool. That's fun.
Tom, two quick ones. Can you talk about the foreign trip this
summer?
I got all
the time in the world today. I got no prep. I got nothing till 3 o'clock. You guys, and bad as it is, I don't even mind standing in front of you guys for whatever length of time.
You are not.
No,
I'll quit right now. You know, that time out here since, you know, the TVs are rolling. But, you know, I always said, you know, I always say to Matt, and now I say it to Max. I usually say Matt, and then I usually say Max. And I always say, you know, well, we can open practice. You know me, I don't care. You pick the date. Ask them what time they want to come. And you know what they always say? Well, hell, those guys don't want to sit through the whole press anyway. And you know what? You're right. You don't want to sit through this whole press conference. So you can walk out on me. We can end it when you want. But I'm yours for as long as you want. Go ahead, Hondo.